Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Diane Ravitch, who's a professor in New York University's Steinhardt School of Education and one of America's best-known education experts. She served as Assistant Secretary of Education under George H.W. Bush and established a reputation as a conservative champion of school choice, testing standards, No Child Left Behind, and other programs that would make schools more efficient and effective. Her latest book, The Death and Life of the Great American School System, explains how she came to make a radical break with those policies. And her new book coming out soon is Reign of Error, The Hoax of the Privatization Movement and the Danger to Public Schools. Welcome to Background Briefing, Diane Ravitch.
Thank you very much. It's wonderful to be with you.
And what do you make of the president's bus tour around upstate New York and Pennsylvania? He's basically the framing it all in terms of making life better for the middle class, and that Obama said that college affordability is key to the middle class. So given his focus that college is a way of restoring the middle class, even though in many ways the middle class might be a myth in this country, he's also talked about a college scorecard. So does this resonate with the middle class? Is this really something that is burdening the middle class?
Well, I don't think the middle class is exactly champing at the bit, waiting to have measurements. And that's what he's talking about, is creating a scorecard and ranking colleges and universities and then giving all this information. And that's somehow going to cut costs. There is absolutely no evidence that any of this is going to cut costs and make colleges more affordable. What's needed to make college more affordable for the middle class is for public entities like state governments and the federal government to help kids who can't pay for college. Colleges right now have about 75% of their faculty are adjunct faculty scraping by and barely making a living. So they're not exactly, living off the fat of the land. And college tuitions are going up because states have been shifting the burden of cost from the state to the individual. And instead of addressing that, the college is saying what's needed is more data and more metrics. And I just think it's race to the top for higher education. And race to the top has done nothing for K-12 education.
Well, I've tried to cover the private school or the private college racket, for the want of a better description, and enormous amounts of federal money go to these private schools, these for-profit colleges that entirely operate on federal money and spend enormous amounts of federal money, our tax dollars, on promoting themselves, whether they're real or not. They indenture these kids for life, give them worthless diplomas, and it is proliferating across the country. And more these shingles are held up, and they prey on minority students, they prey on veterans. So isn't that a place to start? If you're going to clean up...
I wish that that's where he's starting, but he's talking about a federal program that will encompass very fine institutions, state universities, community colleges, nonprofit institutions. He's talking about a level of federal mandate and federal control that'll be immensely burdensome to higher education when he should be targeting these for-profit institutions. They are rip-offs, you're absolutely right. They recruit kids en masse. The same thing is happening, by the way, in K-12 education, where there are now these virtual charter schools. They're just like the for-profit higher education institutions. They provide a lousy education. They take the money. In the case of higher education, the students are left with immense debt. In the case of K-12 education, they're ripping off the taxpayers. The idea of having a for-profit college or a for-profit public school should be anathema, and the president ought to be going after that, but he's not going after that. What he's talking about is creating a massive big data approach to higher education so that he can rate and rank every college and university in the United States and have this big metrical thing, which will probably end up costing universities and colleges even more than they're paying now for the cost of just complying with all the federal mandates.
Well, my understanding, Diane Ravitch, is that student debt has just skyrocketed since...
Absolutely. It's over $1 trillion. I mean, it's like the next big collapse is going to be caused by student debt. And that's really not because colleges are that there are people living the life of Riley. As I mentioned before, 75% of college faculty are called contingent faculty. That's adjuncts. They're people who are being paid by the course. They don't have, most of them don't have pension. They don't have health benefits. They don't have anything. So what's happened is that, and I think the New York Times has covered this, the colleges, and not the colleges, the states have shifted the burden of paying for college, at least in the public universities, from the state to the student. I mean, we used to have free public universities all over this country. California did. The community colleges were free. New York City did. We abandoned free community colleges a long time ago. Why? I mean, if we really want young people to have access to a higher education, we have to make it affordable. And it's not going to become more affordable because of federal mandates and a federal scorecard, but because of actually providing aid to community colleges to be able to offer free courses, and not just online courses, but real interaction with real university professors at no cost. I mean, I have to say, I was in Finland a couple of years ago, and the thing that astonished me most about Finland is that all of higher education is tuition-free because the Finns believe that education is a basic human right and you can't put a price on it. I think that's right.
So, again, I'm speaking with Diane Ravitch, a professor in New York University Steinhardt School of Education and one of America's best-known education experts. She served as Assistant Secretary of Education under George H.W. Bush and established a reputation as a conservative champion of school choice, testing standards, No Child Left Behind, and other programs claiming to make schools more efficient and effective. In her latest book, The Death and Life of the Great American School System, Ravitch explains how she came to make a radical break with those policies, and her new book, out soon, is Reign of Error, The Hoax of the Privatization Movement and the Danger to Public Schools. So President Obama and his education secretary, who's a close friend of his, are simply not dealing with the real issues in education where there were so much public funds that literally being wasted and ripped off in this predatory for-profit school market that's indenturing thousands and thousands of children. And it very much mirrors the housing bubble that brought down the economy in 2008, because people that bought those liar's loans mortgages were aspirants to the middle class, minority families often, and they ended up losing their homes and living in their cars. And it's the same thing's happening to their kids now. And the vets, young veterans, are being drawn into this racket. So my understanding is that there was a feeble attempt to clean that up by the administration, and that Donald Graham, the head of the Washington Post at the time, who's that company's main source of income is Kaplan Education, which is a for-profit school, he apparently got them to water down the rules. So,
sure. Well, Kaplan is not only one of the major testing companies, it also has Kaplan University, which is another one of those for-profit universities. And I think, frankly, there shouldn't, should be anathema to have a for-profit university, because there are now lots of federal data that show that the young people who enroll in these universities are less likely to finish, are less likely to end up with a burden with debt, and less likely to get a degree. And yet the reason they continue to exist is because they hire very high-priced lobbyists in both parties. And if you do the digging, you'll find out that some of the best-known names now no longer in Congress, senators and congressmen, are taking money to lobby for the for-profit higher education institutions. And they should be closed down. I mean, I have to say that I find it offensive that kids are going to college, and instead of their professors getting a decent living wage, their investors making money, and the kids aren't getting an education.
So rather than deal with this, which apparently they tried to deal with and got rolled by the lobbyists, he's off touring around in a bus, and he's going to be with at Vice President Biden's alma mater in Scranton, Pennsylvania as well, talking about what? I mean, you know, what we're talking about is...
They're not going to be talking about reigning in the for-profit institutions that are ripping kids off. They're not going to be talking about either the federal government subsidizing kids who need money to finish their education. They're not going to be talking about the states sharing, assuming a fair share of the burden of providing free community colleges for young people who need the community college education. They're going to be talking about measurement. They're going to be talking about big data. They're going to be talking about making scorecards. What that has to do with making college affordable escapes me.
So what is this mania then about privatizing education? Because a lot of the big high-tech billionaires like Bill Gates and others seem to be beguiled by it. I don't know what the connection is with billionaires.
Well, I think, you know, I've been studying this issue of privatization now for several years, and my new book is about privatization because it's rampant now in the K-12 schools, particularly, I might add, in Los Angeles. But I think that the interest in it is that there are people like Bill Gates and Eli Broad who believe that it's only the for-profit sector that is willing to innovate. And so if you want to have lots of innovation, you unleash the private sector to make money, and from that will come constant reinvention, disruption, turmoil, new ideas, fresh thinking, et cetera. In fact, we haven't seen any of that happen in the K-12 sector. What we've seen is scandals and frauds and profiteers and kids being ripped off and families being ripped off. And a few innovative schools, but most of the schools that are getting these high test scores are practicing 19th century methods. And if this is innovation, you know, I can sell you the Brooklyn Bridge.
Right. Well, why is it then that the teachers' unions bear the brunt of all of the animus that these billionaires have towards public schools? They're suggesting that the reason there's no innovation is because the unions prevent it. I know
This is ridiculous, and I'll tell you why it's ridiculous, because you have only to look at the states that either have weak unions or no unions and say, are they innovative? No, of course they're not innovative. They're the most repressed and backward states where teachers get rolled, where they have the lowest salaries. A state like North Carolina, which is a right-to-work state, it takes a teacher 15 years to earn $40,000 a year. I mean, I was just today on my blog, I posted an article about how the governor has two of his campaign aides that he's paying $85,000, and these are kids 24 years old, and a teacher would never be able to make that much money. And who adds more social value, the governor's campaign 24-year-old campaign aide or a veteran of teaching for 20 years? I think that the reason that unions are bearing the brunt of the blame is to shut them up, because the unions represent the only organized force that can stand up to the power of the privatization movement. And so the privatizers have simply blamed the unions and said, we're not doing as well as we should because of the unions. What I demonstrate in my book is that the whole narrative of the privatizers is a big lie. I mean, the fact is that if you look at the U.S. government's test scores over the last 40 years, achievement in the United States on tests of math and reading has never been higher than it is today. High school graduation rates have never been higher than they are today. High school dropout rates have never been lower than they are today. So what we're faced with is a narrative created by people like Bill Gates, Eli Broad, the Walton Family Foundation, the most right-wing groups in the country, are saying, well, we must privatize because the private sector will create so much innovation. And yet we know from study after study that whether it's vouchers or charters, they don't get better results than regular public schools. But what they do is to make people feel that they have no obligation to other people's children, that we are only responsible for looking after ourselves. And that's the end of community, and that's the end of any sense of social obligation.
Well, I was going to say, Diane Ravitch, that I do know a number of school teachers here in Los Angeles who teach in the inner city. And these are some of the most generous, hardworking people who really do make a difference in these kids' lives. And most of the kids, without the intervention of teachers, they already come from a very disadvantaged social and environment in the first place. And these teachers bring an awful lot to the lives of these kids. And the idea that people would want to take money away from this already impoverished and underfunded operation in order to subsidize private charter schools is mind-boggling. And it seems to me that so much of it's driven by the kind of egos of very wealthy people who are just going through their own private social experimentation because they have the funds to do it.
Well, you're exactly right, and I must say you're going to love my new book. My new book is about exactly what you're saying, which is that a class of incredibly wealthy people have decided that they know how to reform the nation's schools. They have contempt for everyday working teachers who are dedicating their lives to an underpaid profession. They seek to remove all of the standards for entry into the profession. They love, for example, Teach for America, and a lot of very bright young people come into Teach for America. But what Teach for America does is that it lowers the standards of the profession. It says anyone can teach. You can come right out of college, 5 weeks of training, you're a teacher. you're not a teacher. You should be a teaching assistant, a teaching aide, but not a teacher. And what this whole narrative, the privatization and reformer narrative has done, has been to lower the status of teachers and to, you know, open the door to for-profit operations. It's astonishing, and I've done a national overview. There are states like Ohio, there are states like Michigan, where there are charter operators making millions and millions of dollars every year in profits taken out of the taxpayer's wallet. In Michigan, 80% of the charter schools are for-profit charter schools. In Ohio, there are virtual charter schools that are where the owners are the biggest contributors to the state Republican Party, and they make millions of dollars, and none of their schools are any good. They're terrible schools, and yet they make millions of dollars because they pour it into advertising and its political campaign contributions, and the schools just go on and on despite their failure.
So just in closing then, Diane Ravitch, the president in this bus tour of upstate New York and Pennsylvania to offer his latest ideas on education says in his address to students that it took him and Michelle to pay off their student loans and their law school loans. They didn't pay them off until they were in their 40s. And he also, you know, lamented the idea that the average students today have far more loans. The average college student graduates carry more than $26,000 in debt. I'm not even sure that's a low figure. So he's displaying empathy. It's got dramatically worse since he was in school and had to pay his loans off. But at the end of the day, there's no substance to this, is there?
But see, at the end of the day, he's not proposing to help anyone pay off their loans. He's not proposing a federal program to help states and to help students lower the cost of tuition. He's proposing measurement. Measurement doesn't lower anyone's tuition. And all of this business with big data and scorecards and measuring this, that, and the other and more information, that's all simply going to expand federal regulation, federal mandates, and we'll have lots more people hired to do all of the data collection. I cannot see what it has to do with lowering the cost of college.
Right, and you went through that experience, didn't you, with No Child Left Behind and other programs
No Child Left Behind, George W. Bush's program, is now a tainted brand, and everybody recognizes it, but they can't seem to get away from this idea that the federal government has to keep measuring everybody, even though nothing has come of it. I mean,
right, and we learned from what happened in Georgia, the fraud that was involved in ginning up these scores so that these schools could win prizes and these principals could get prizes, and
the superintendent walked away with $500,000 in bonus,
right,
which she will be able to keep even if she's convicted, because it will cost the state more to recover the money than to just let her keep it. So she'll keep it no matter what happens to her.
And the poor kids whose grades were altered in order to make the mm-hmm. superintendent look good, their lives are ruined.
I mean, what you have to say about No Child Left Behind is it was signed in 2002. President Bush signed it in 2002. So we've had now a decade of experience. If it had worked, we would have people say, gee, aren't we satisfied now with American education? No, they just say they need more reform, more radical reform. What they really mean is they want to privatize in every place across this country, in every city, there's a privatization activity going on to turn more and more of the public dollars over to private hands. And it's No Child Left Behind didn't work. It was a failure. And yet Congress can't seem to get out of this mindset that measurement is the answer. And now the president's going around saying that measurement is the answer to student debt. It's not the answer to student debt. The answer to student debt is for states to step up and say, we will make community college free or next to free. We'll lower the cost of tuition so that students who want to go to college can afford to go to college. But they're not doing that. They're just going to measure and collect more data.
Well, Diane Ravitch, I thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you. It's been great to talk to you.
Again, I've been speaking with Diane Ravitch. She's a professor in New York University's Steinhardt School of Education and one of America's best-known education experts. She served as Assistant Secretary of Education under George H.W. Bush, and she established a reputation as a conservative champion of school choice, testing standards, No Child Left Behind, and other programs claiming to make schools more efficient and effective. In her latest book, The Death and Life of the Great American School System, Ravitch explains how she came to make a radical break with those policies, and her new book out soon is Reign of Error, The Hoax of the Privatization Movement and the Danger to Public Schools. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank producer Graham Fitzgibbon. This program's available for podcasting at ianmasters.com, where you can also contact me, and I'll be back again with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.